Welcome to the Competent Investor. Today we're going to focus on silver, and I have David Morgan, Bob Coleman, Vince Lancey, and Steve Santangelo joining me today. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for joining me.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
Thanks. Great to be here.
I'm really looking forward to chatting with everybody and kind of bouncing some ideas back and forth. Of course, we're speaking today on Monday, the 10th of November. Silver broke back above $50 today. And, you know, there's a couple interesting developments over the last couple weeks. You know, we had a little bit of a pullback in both gold and silver. Seems to be rebounding as of now. We'll see how that holds up. But, you know, over the last week here, it seems that China started to restrict exports on silver. The U.S. classified it as a critical mineral, and now even Australia named it as one of its five priority metals in its 2024 to 2035 strategy. So I think we could start on this critical minerals designation by the U.S. Do any of you guys have a particular feeling on if this materially makes a difference, and let's say what the strategy is behind that?
Well, hey, at this point, it's a guess. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, well, I could say just from a more of a trading perspective, I mean, platinum has been on the list since 2018, or probably earlier. I mean, David would know that. But part of this idea of putting something on the critical metals or minerals list is actually, if they're going to tariff anything, it's to try to get domestic production sort of souped up, and allowing domestic producers not to get undercut by foreign supply, so to speak. So in essence, it tends to artificially keep the price up in order to allow, you know, mining activity to be somewhat profitable to pull this stuff out of the ground. But that's, yeah, because a lot of people say, well, why the hell would you be tariffing something that you're net importing 330 million ounces a year in? But that's the logic, at least.
Yeah, I don't think anyone knows at this point. The you know, you laugh about the silver mining in the United States, because I wrote a piece recently on strategic metal to Silver Eagle, because we did have a strategic stockpile through 85. They passed into law the Liberty Act, and they took that strategic silver and turned it into coins. And the initial legislation said you had to obtain all silver domestically to continue the Eagle program. And after a few years, they go, whoops, we don't mine enough silver in this country to put out 40 million Eagles, for crying out loud. So mm-hmm. It's a really ridiculous. So my perspective is, if it is truly strategic, and of course, being biased, it is, you do need it for war. And if you're going to build back the strategic stockpile, how big is it going to be and how long is it going to take? Because that's another takeaway of the physical realm that people haven't factored in before.
Right.
Vince, anything to add there?
Yeah. To Bob's point, actually, there's a fly in the ointment with what he said on my idea. So platinum's been on the critical minerals list since 2018. And here I am about to say silver's going to infinity because of that. And I'm like, oh, shit, platinum didn't really do anything, did it? But I'll come to that in a second. And the other thing that Dave said, I think is significant in the sense that I'm wondering, I mean, as a silver bull, I know we're stockpiling silver now. Like that's where I am, right? And I'm wondering how much of it is stockpiling, which is, you know, central to what mine and Dave's aspect is, and how much of it is rebuilding industry, which is what Bob's saying. And I guess what I'm getting at is designating silver as, without going down a rabbit hole, designating silver as a critical mineral allows the president to do whatever he wants towards increasing silver supply. And to everyone's point here, we can subsidize companies, right? Like Bob said, we can, you know, hopefully drill or mine for more of it. And the tariffs is a controversial thing, because if you tariff an industrial metal that you need to import, well, then you're just cutting your own nose off. And they already ran into that with copper. You know, they said, we're going to tariff copper imports on all finished goods. And then they went, I mean, this is literally what happened. Then they said, oh, wait a minute, we need cathodes. and cathodes have copper in them. So they designated cathodes as semi-finished, and they said, we'll take them in. So they're doing workarounds. With silver, as opposed to copper, we have no domestic production, as you guys know better than me, compared to copper, and we have no refining capacity. So we really do need to build the industry up. And if we tariff it, and I don't think we will, if we tariff it, that will support existing producers in the US, but it won't get raw materials in. Anyway, I guess what I'm saying is, I guess when I zoom out a little bit, I look at the whole thing, I look at the United States as in a need to rebuild supply chains for critical minerals and minerals in general. And the way to do that, given how China is doing things, very central, very authoritarian, is to give the president more power. So if you look at the list of critical minerals now, Dave, it's like every metal is on there now. Like what metal's not critical? You know, aluminum, that's probably critical too. I mean, so I'm looking at it like they just want to have the excuse to be able to say we need that to buy it, to hoard it. And I really think, and so coming back to silver, I have been, unfortunately, I did not pay attention to the platinum part, which could be a problem, but I'm looking at it from a lithium uranium point of view. And I think silver could, I mean, I'm not predicting here, right? But we're all adults. I think silver could, using the lithium and uranium analog, silver could triple in 5 years. Okay, not triple tomorrow. So I think that's very reasonable, given the fact that we are going to hoard it. We are going to drill for it, but demand, like Bob's saying, we're going to pay people to buy it. You know, that's what's going to happen. And simultaneously, China starts restricting it. So if we want it, they're not going to give it to us. And it's going to be, I think it's coming and going. I think silver goes up because of that. What do I know though?
I was going to say maybe we need a rare earth critical stockpile and or refining critical capacity, right?
Yeah. I mean, we need to go into Mexico, and we need to invade Mexico corporately and say we want all your refineries, you know, something like that. We want to annex Mexico or annex.
Steve, anything to add on the idea of critical minerals?
Yeah, well, it is true that China, the Commerce Department, they announced this supposed restriction future or more regulation on their silver, tungsten, and antimony exports. And so I think this is going to be an ongoing theme, especially as, you know, I focus on peak energy in the future. And look at silver, even though gold production has continued to go up, it probably is going to hit a new high this year. Silver production's almost 70 million ounces below its 900 million ounce production of 2015. So we're 10 years later, and we're still 70 million ounces less. And industrial demand continues to be strong. And so I think going forward, as silver continues to be highly in demand, not only for industrial demand, which has shot up considerably in the last 5 years, but investment demand is picking up in many different segments. And I mean, we'll talk about this later, but Indian silver ETF investments, almost 100 million ounces. That was nothing 3 years ago. So this is all part of that same fundamental diagram, which I believe silver is going to be one of the most undervalued. It's one of the most undervalued assets right now.
Well, you know, interestingly, Steve, as you bring up this, let's say this growing industrial demand, I saw a report today. I didn't have time to verify it before our call here, but the gist of the report is that next year, industrial demand will account for all of mine production, which doesn't leave any for investment demand and other demand there. So, you know, how At what point do you guys think the rubber starts to hit the road here in the elasticity of the above ground supply that is available for investment and industrial and other uses?
I'm going to butt in here real quick. This is what Matt Watson shows in that chart. I put it up on Financial Sense and in a couple other interviews. But according to Matt, he's an independent metals analyst. Exactly what you just said. Everything that's mined is used in industry. And so the curve goes like this. So there's supply and demand, it's 1 billion ounces counting recycling, and from like a couple of years ago, everything keeps going above it, is unavailable outside of drawing down the above ground stockpile. So I'm just giving you verification on what you said. And by the way, that was his low case.
According to Metals Focus, Silver Institute, and I even believe CPM Group, that data tends to be pretty similar. From what I understand, in total industrial silver demand last year was a bit more than 700 million ounces. This year, I think it's going to be a little bit more than that, in that range. Total global mine supply is it's going to be 825, 830. So there's still about 100, 110, 120 million ounces more of global mine supply. And this doesn't include recycling. So, but it is industrial demand has been a big pinch on the total supply and demand picture in the last 4 or 5 years, due to a lot of it due to solar.
Vince, anything to add there?
Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, I don't want to go all over the place on this, but the we have been right. We have, I mean, everybody knows this here, right? We have been in a shortfall in production for whatever, like 5 of the last 10 years, at least 5. Steve will probably know better than me, and we have been using above ground supply of that. And I think the question you asked is, Tom, how long? And I'm going to say, without being a panic about it, we're in this situation right now. And we're seeing that because of the LBMA strain. Because the above ground, there was plenty of easily sourced above ground silver, and we didn't have a problem. Now it's getting a little bit more stressful to find it. And it's in no small part due to two things. One is the Indian demand. You know, the Indian demand that Dave notes has exploded. And it's exploded because India's policy, aside from the fact that they want it, India's policy, for whatever reason, is to get its people into metals in an almost homage or copying of what China has done. And the second thing is China. China seems to have some unfinished business with silver going back to the 1800s, that they still want to own more of it than most people do. I've been studying a lot of the Chinese behavior, and they're buying more than they need for industry. Now, I'm not saying it's not industrial silver, but I am saying that they're kind of cornering a market a little bit. And I've talked to Ross Norman about this, the guy used to be, he has Metals Focus, to be Sharps Pixley. And it would seem that China is in the process of making silver somehow more collateralized. I mean, look, the recent LB, I would just say this. The recent LBMA problem, and this is my opinion, was mitigated by someone loaning metal from the US and loaning metal from China. So they got their metal leased to them for 30, 60, 90, however many days, and they got some real physical metal for sure. But simultaneously, China is now emptying their own vaults and putting them in their corporate Guang. I'm sure, I'm not sure how to say the name, Guangdong or Zhentong is another one. And they're drawing down their own vaults as LBMA is looking for silver to replenish their stocks. So maybe the worst of the drought is over, but the above ground stocks, I think, are just done until we get to a certain price. And that's, I think we're, to answer your question, I think we're in it right now, and it's slow motion because it's silver, and you can always buy a little time with silver. You know, that's how they do it. They sell it now, and they kick it down the road. But I think we're coming to an end of the road of sorts.
Yeah, I think the one point that I always try to underscore here is, no matter what the catalysts are, it seems like, we have to look further out. We can't expect, I mean, it used to be $50 silver tomorrow. Now it's $70 to $100 silver.
Right.
This is a process that happens over time. And as you said, Vince, to your earlier point, we could see a tripling of the price over the next 5 years. And of course, as a reminder, there's going to be peaks and valleys between that. There's going to be a reasonable pullback. Some people think it's maybe a painful pullback or pullbacks between now and then, but it is going to happen. Bob, did you have anything to add to that stuff?
Yeah, one of the things that may be a surprise going forward, if the price starts to levitate higher and higher, is that physical demand, where the prices will play out is more in the derivatives markets and the exchange market than it will be in the physical over the counter market. And part of the reason would be financing costs will continue to rise, especially if you're talking a lot higher price. It's going to be much more sensitive to, especially if London's that tight and so forth, and you still have that capital flow coming into London, or should say the ETFs, where London's where most of that metal's held. I think a lot of players may end up just going, hey, listen, silver is a volatile enough type of asset that I can trade in and out of it a lot easier than just buying the physical product, sitting on it for however long, and then maybe trying to hedge against it. But when you try to hedge against it, all of a sudden, the futures markets tend to break. You got too many players in too small of a market that starts to break all some of the spreads and some of the trading strategies. It wipes out the profit motive. So you could see basically where the price goes higher, and ultimately it's the options market, for example, that tends to maybe tail wags the dog, so to speak, and pumps that price up to a point where people start to let go of it physically, which would add supply into the market. But that's just one avenue to look at. As this thing kind of progresses and sort of matures, you're going to see through, I think, some of the analysis and some of the spreads and so forth, how players are positioning themselves. Like, for example, today was a massive short squeeze. I mean, anybody who walked into the market thinking, the government's never going to find any type of resolve to come out of its, shutdown, and all of a sudden, a deal's done, or the talk of a deal's done. A lot of people that went short silver looking for, that move to 45 or 44, or even 46, gold down to 3,800, 3,600. They just got their pants ripped off on this rally. So, and that's, you could see it today because the market never let people in. It just kept going up and up and up and up. And if you look at volatility ratios right now, the volatility ratios are all telling you, the market may have seen its lows because volatility, both on VXSLV as well as GVZ, which is the volatility ratio on GLD options, both had a big spike today and they broke that downtrend. So, when you're looking at this thing longer term, I mean, the price moves when fast money comes in, it may not go for the physical, which is what I think, all of us own the physical for its attributes, but, the price action also tells a different story.
Mm-hmm. Well, to that point, Bob, we saw this shortness in the LBMA. We saw that tightness in that London market. Do you think that this price pullback helped alleviate some of that tightness in London and gave them time to be able to source metal from elsewhere, as we heard that there were, planes flying back now from the US back to London to deliver metal? Did that help them solve a lot of that tightness in the market?
Oh yeah, the backwardation. More what I think social media doesn't get, unfortunately, is a lot of the retail dealers and promoters out there tend to give you a very one-sided picture. But in reality, when you have backwardation, money is going to go where it's best treated. The banks are going to make money on every transaction they do because that's their job. They may lose a couple, but at the end of the day, they're working on borrowed money and they're working on spreads. And so when that backwardation got to $2, $2.50 under spot, on the futures markets, it just made total sense to start, take buying back your short in New York, delivering the metal in London, selling it in London, and life goes on. And, maybe, who knows, 2 weeks from now, Trump puts in these tariffs and all of a sudden that metal's flown right back out of London, right back to New York again. I mean,
it's the economics of it that we have to worry. Not the economics; it's the regulatory economics. You and I are we're talking about we talked about this before. EFPs and arbitrage goes back and forth. Now it's like, well, maybe they won't let me take it back, So that's where all the everybody has a higher level that they want to get paid now. That's really what's happening. They're like, I'll do it, but I just need to be paid a lot more. I agree.
Yeah. And not only that, if you look at here in the US, the retail market right now, you have a lot of metal being sold back still. You're now in a season of IRA minimum distribution liquidations, which is very seasonal. It comes in, November, December, where people have to sell a portion of their assets, as a minimum required distribution. A lot of these self-directed IRAs have a lot of this metal that's starting to come back into the market. There's also people that, are seeing this thing going back up to 50 and saying, hey, listen, maybe this is the time to get out. They're thinking, well, we're still going to get a lot of volatility and so forth. But and then at the other side of the equation is now you're having the 2026 coinage starting to come out from the Royal Canadian Mint, the US Mint, and so forth. So that's pushing premiums down as well. So there's this dichotomy right now that as and I saw this coming when back in October, everyone was going, oh my God, this is a shortage of coinage and the premiums are going to go through the roof and you got to get it right now. And it happens just like clockwork, where you go to a retooling, the sovereign mints stop making the current year product. And they start making next year's product, which delivers 2 to 3 months out. And you just get this sort of seasonal tightness that develops. Now, of course, this tightness happened to be hit with kerosene and gasoline on the fire because of, obviously the big move in the silver market with in October.
Well, Bob and Vince, to your earlier point, and I guess this is a counterpoint to it, this idea of tariffs, being imposed as a counter force to that. Bob, you recently posted a story that was calling for the next possible catalyst for the metals being a ruling or a possible ruling by the Supreme Court against the legality of Trump's tariffs. So how would that work, and how would that also affect this market, considering that we or the US would end up having to pay back millions or I don't know how much has been collected yet in tariffs to these countries that have already paid?
Yeah, that's the flip side to this whole thing, that if the tariffs are illegal or couldn't have been put in place, now you have a deficit issue and you have money that has to be paid back from the federal coffers. But at the same time, now you've just taken sort of a revenue line item out of the federal government's playbook. And then that actually is going to start increasing the deficits, create more debt. Need for more debt financing and debt servicing, and that's where the dollar could come into play to the downside. And maybe that's what the metals are sensing here, is that not it's maybe not just simply a reopening of the government, but actually the reopening of the government is going to create the government to spend more money again, which it hadn't been spending a lot the last few weeks. And that's why the bank reserves dropped down significantly, because a lot of the Treasury general account at the Fed was ballooning at the same time. So they weren't spending that money, and that money wasn't transferring from the Treasury General account into the banking sector. And so you get these weird sort of anomalies that start happening that make it look like maybe there's something that's getting ready to collapse. But in reality, this is just money swishing around in the bathtub.
David, have you seen anything like this volatility on tariffs before?
No, I haven't. There's one thing I want to say, circle back a little bit to, is the export of silver from China. China smelts 40% of the silver. And anyone that knows how the smelting world works, they don't want dollars. They never did, no matter where they are. They want metal. So they take a percentage. And then best number I could come up with, because I'm not a smelter and they don't show me their books, is about 8%. So there's a whoever's shipping doré or concentrate into China is going to take, let's say, an 8% hit, even if they have a contract to ship out the finished product, because that's how the smelting refining industry works. So now my question is really, if they're restricted from, shipping back, it can't be restricted from shipping back a contract basis where I'm ABC mine and I ship in this concentrate and I get 92% back by contract, right? So I don't know what real effect it will have unless I'm missing something. And Bob, Vince, or Steve probably know more on that than I do. But anyway, I'm just thinking that out loud.
Steve, do you have anything to add on the tariff idea or the smelting as well? Dave, you kind of jumped ahead of me there. I had that lined up, but that's okay.
No, not really. It's just that what's interesting, the amount of exports that China does, it was 136 million last year. And this year, according to the data, it's going to be 140 to 145. September, they shipped about 15 million ounces, exported 15 million ounces. We don't know what October is. And so that's a lot of silver. And so are they going to start holding back on some of that? Well, that's one of the things in 26 and 27, the idea that they may hold back 15, 20% for whatever reason. That was that announcement that came out, the announcement number 68. So it will be interesting to see what that looks like in 2026, above and beyond the tariff issue.
Vince and Bob, you guys have touched on the silver EFP piece many times here. Is there any smoke there anymore as a part of this LBMA tightness that we already discussed that is still causing some friction within that market?
You should go first, Bob. I
Okay.
don't know where to go with that. I'm putting let me help Bob out and get started just by saying, yeah, but the EFP is the actual thermometer that tells us what's going on. You know what I mean? Right, Bob?
It's getting to a point now where, like today, for example, last night you went from a backwardation of 15 cents to a contango of 15 cents, and for the audience, it basically means, going into, or say Friday, the futures price was still a little bit cheaper than the spot London price. And then when this short covering started coming in Friday night or Sunday night, that thing flipped to a contango. And now you're back to backwardation again. I mean, of like 15 cents or 19 cents. So this movement is very, very volatile. It's almost telling you that either there's illiquidity, players are caught on the wrong side, maybe guys that are short the market, and spreads maybe in the options. My sense is it's probably the options market, and market makers that may have used derivatives to either hedge or to play with in the marketplace. This move right here, I mean, this is a huge move in both metals, gold and silver today. I mean, it's not common that you see a $100 move back up, 100 plus move in gold, and a $2 plus move in silver just out of nowhere. So it obviously there were players that were caught, and I think this EFP, this wild jostling of moving from contango to backwardation and and so forth, is probably showing signs of pressure, whether it be on the market making side, or potentially you have algorithmic traders or derivative traders that are coming into this market with some pretty big money trying to push this market back up, toward its highs again.
I can jump in and add a little color to that if you want, Tom.
Yep.
The Bob and I had a conversation, the first in-depth conversation that we had in about EFPs in 2022, when silver was on its lows. Like the Fed started easing in April. I mean, not easing, tightening in April, and then we had like an 8 month decline or 6 month decline. And in September and October, with silver like on its lows. And my information showed me that the CTAs were not getting short and the funds were selling it. You may not remember, but you should probably do remember. We started talking, and I'm like, the EFP is in backwardation down there, and the funds are just getting short. And we concluded from different perspectives that there's physical demand in London and it's holding the spot up. And the Americans are just selling it like lunatics, like we always do when we're puking, right? But it turned out in 22 that this was a lot of this was Indian demand, right, Bob?
Yeah,
Right?
that's correct. Yeah.
Right. So the Indian demand was like starting to really rev up, and they were bidding in London, and they were like, I don't care, I just want the metal. And the American funds were like, I have to get out, I have a margin call. And so the futures, which should have been anywhere from 5 cents to 30 cents over, were flat to 5 cents under. It, mathematically, it doesn't make sense. But if there is plenty of silver around, and there was, but during this time frame, those bullion banks, they're like, okay, fine. Sold in London, buy it in the US. Sold, and then basically they're just getting free money. It's the same silver that they're buying at a discount to where the silver is. And then the market rallied. Now, this part has ha happens all the time. When the market rallies, it's because the selling stops. You know, for example, look at what just happened in October. Silver got whacked, the metal became available, and the whole complex dropped. But there's still a physical bid out there. Now, who is it? Who cares? But I mean, I care, right? It's London. It's coming out of London. London needs to replenish their supply. So their bid will be a little bit sticky, you know? And now the futures, having gotten too long and too speculatively ahead of themselves, puked into the lows, you know, after the run-up. And now they're back. And so what do they do? This buying is being speculatively led. So the EFP is here. Your physical's here and your future's dipped under. The physical's not chasing, the physical's here, right? And so the futures start going like this. And now it's like the futures are dragging everything up again. So this is a speculative rally. It could be short covering on the future side, which probably is. It could be physical that maybe went to market and caused it. Maybe somebody just got an alarm that says silver's got to go up. But the EFP that Bob and I look at is like, you know, when silver's on the lows, the EFP. When it gets over like this, we tend to say, okay, someone's buying physical. Eventually, we're going to start moving back up again. And when it gets on the highs and you see it should be, let's say, spot should be here and future should be there, but they're way up here, you're like, oh, that's frothy. It's almost like an RSI or stochastic, you know, overdone, oversold. And so we look at that all the time. And right now, confirming what Bob said, the EFP was trading as if someone was accumulating physical on the lows. And no way I could give you the story. It's like, oh, they're accumulating physical. That means it's going to go up. No, it doesn't. It means when it goes up, there'll be less physical around to buy. And so the futures will lead the way. So I think we're in a dynamic market now. I mean, look, the other point I want to make to Bob's point is the EFP, when you're looking at markets, in silver and gold, historically, always for gold, most of the time in silver, spot is here and the futures are there. And that differential is a reflection of cost to carry. It costs $25 to buy silver, it costs $25 and the opportunity cost and the storage and yada 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 here, right? Well, silver is silver. There's no crop, you know, there's no boll weevil that eats it. There's no I mean there are restrictions on its fungibility because you have to recuperate it, but silver should almost never be in backwardation. Gold is almost never in backwardation because it's not used, it's sitting around, we can always borrow from someone else, yada yada. Silver used to be like that too. Now we're talking about silver in backwardation with nothing going on. So this is the EFP used to be, let's say, like this. Now it's normally like this. At flat, give or take. And that's a sign that the physical depletion of above ground stocks is increasing in problems. And China taking their metal off the market is doing that as well. You know, China's production has decreased. They're running out of silver that they mine. And that's one of the reasons or excuses that they're not exporting as much anymore. Anyway, so yeah, the EFP tells me that what used to be an occasional panic is now a chronic problem. And so I'm sticking with it.
Well, you know, guys, there's so many of these, you know, moving pieces that we try to account for. They get attention at different times. So I appreciate, you know, being able to walk through each one of these individually. Another one of the, you know, pieces of this puzzle that I wanted to get to is the ETF demand and flows. How is that moving? And Steve, maybe you can take this, you know, account for the Indian demand, as you mentioned earlier as well.
Well, For several months, we saw demand, especially in October, move into the ETFs. And Bob knows this too about the SLV, and maybe even David. It's a very interesting dynamic taking place. But we were seeing inventories move up, and the SLVs that are in Ireland and the UK, different ETFs, different iShares ETFs. But I would say this: the new kid on the block is India, and for them to typically, India has been a physical silver buyer, a lot also in the rural areas. But I don't know if now that they're in the city, instead of purchasing physical for different reasons, they are now getting into ETFs. And I think there's 14 ETFs. And just last month in September, I'm still waiting for the October data to come out, but just in 1 month, it was 20 million ounces. And so then in October, you heard that couple of the ETFs in India were having problems accessing silver. So they put a halt on adding more investment into those ETFs. But it's an interesting thing to see how much silver now, especially in the LBMA, is allocated to the ETFs. And it fell just a little bit in October. The other float increased, I think, 53 million ounces compared to the COMEX fell 52 million ounces in October. So a lot of that silver must have went to the LBMA. But I think ETF demand, it's going to be interesting to see going forward, because India has 1.3 billion people, how much silver will go into the silver ETFs? So right now, we've been seeing some net little outflows of silver in the American silver ETFs.
Anybody have anything else to add there?
Yep. One of the things that, just from a fundamentalist standpoint, we all talk about the ETFs and so forth. And at some point, all this money printing and money creation and capital flows going into ETFs, thinking that's going to basically just suck even more silver out of the markets. We may get to a point where, these ETFs can't buy any more silver. Like Steve just mentioned, that firm in India that had problems trying to accumulate it. And then the question is, well, what happens then? Does the government or does bigger hands come in and start taking delivery out of these ETFs and start giving it to, that is that where that above ground stock is going to come from? So, those are the types of things I think as investors, longer term investors that say, hey, listen, I may not trust the financial system for whatever reason. At the same time, you have to look at, if you're really a bull in silver, and looking at it from the longer term perspective, this is an actual risk that you actually have to start looking at, is the ability, is the concern that these ETFs may be forced to unwind positions or stop taking in any more money. And then the question is, well, how do you play it? And that may cause a lot of issues as well.
I want to add just a bit more to that. If you go back to the US silver ETF holdings, they've shrunk. I mean, at the height of the bull market in 2021, the combined ETF holdings was 1.1 to 1.2 billion ounces. Today, the total holdings are about 30, 35% less than that peak. And I started looking at that, probably spoke to Bob about it. We talk so often, but what's going on? The algos have got to be saying buy, 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 and everybody's sitting on their hands. Did someone put out the word that we need the physical? Don't you dare buy any of the ETFs and make them ship it over in there. I know that's with my hat on, but it is the fact's a fact. I find it interesting that with this kind of a move from, we could say 35 breakout, I'll put that point, I won't argue with Vince, I don't know what his number is, but roughly 35 to 50, it got there in a pretty big hurry. And yet the ETFs didn't do much at all. That baffles me.
That's right. Let me put a tinfoil hat on with Dave for a second. There has been very little addition to the American ETF in silver throughout this run. And we're still, what did you say, 35% below the highs? Right. Okay, so what the hell is going on? And nobody knows, but I believe, again, this is the tinfoil hat comment, I believe that the custodian banks have been short. And borrowing that metal for other obligations, and that's part of the cash and carry trade of it. It's not paranoid. It's part of the borrowing and lending that you do back and forth. And I believe you're seeing a short covering rally. We shouldn't be at $50 with this with this level. How about I'll just keep it simple. We should be at $50 with this level of ETF filling, and that's a sign that there's no extra silver out there to put into the ETFs. Like Bob said, the silver is mostly like when you buy a silver ETF in the US, it's really silver in London that gets allocated there. Maybe it gets shipped, maybe it doesn't. I don't know, but it almost feels like the silver ETFs aren't even really catching that much fire yet. I wanted to add something about the ETFs in general from a like a zoomed out point of view. The Indian demand is massive and it seems relatively new, right? The China demand, this started in China, and I guess what I'm saying in a very big backing out, protectionist, mercantilist type of position is that China has been liberalizing gold. I hate using that word, but I have to use it sometimes. China has been liberalizing gold ownership domestically for years. You can own gold again. You can have your savings account attached to buy gold. And then they move from physical to, well, you can buy an ETF. And Chinese are like, well, we don't trust you. We don't trust you, right? Okay, well, a couple of years go by, I'm like, okay, we'll try the ETFs. And it seems like slowly they're getting all their people in the system. And that's what China did. They did that. And what India is doing now seems to be the same thing with silver. I don't know how they're getting to do it, but they're just like starting to, Indians are starting to buy silver ETFs. And they've been buying physical silver for years as well. So I feel like India is pulling a page from China's book, and that is to get people used to it, get people used to it, and then put them in an ETF. And I think that's a BRICS mindset. They want to create financial markets, but they don't want to create financial markets with stocks. They want to create them with something that they already have, something physical. And that all ties in with the de-dollarization as well. I mean, silver's low-lying fruit for Indians, And I think the ETF is the next step. Buy jewelry, buy coins, buy bars. I mean, India's been trying to get Indians to fork over their metal for years. Now they're just getting them to buy ETFs and they're forking over their metal in custody. It's kind of like they're becoming American slowly. Hopefully not too quickly, but that's the idea. I just think that it's huge picture stuff.
Well, Vince, to that point, China has made moves like starting to pay interest on gold. What do you think that development actually means? Are they trying to bring the personal holdings of gold into bank custodians?
Yeah, I just wrote a piece on this. You must have pulled that from something I wrote, right? Maybe.
Maybe.
I hate an interviewer who does his homework. Now I have to remember what I wrote. All right, so I think it does two things, right? Without getting too deep about it. When you're saying to your Chinese citizen, we'll pay you interest on your gold in gold, which is what they're saying now. I don't know how big it is or to what extent they're doing it or if they're restricted or not. You're saying two things, and this is what China's been doing all along. The first thing you're saying to your Chinese citizen is you like gold, you can get more, and we'll pay you in gold. You trust gold, right? And Chinese citizens have been owners of gold with portable wealth for centuries for that reason. And so that's one thing. And the second, and what they're also doing is, to the chagrin of Americans is, or the West is, they're not just saying this is we're buying it once. They're saying to the world, we're not just buying it and holding it. We're buying and adding. So it goes from being a one-time trade to being a flow trade. There's going to be a constant flow of growing demand coming from our citizens. It also says to the BRICS partners, it says, we're not just doing one trade. We're going to constantly have demand for it. So when you buy it, you won't be buying the top. I mean, it's kind of like when Saylor says, I'm going to go buy more Bitcoin. Not to talk about Bitcoin here, but it's like when Saylor says, I'm going to buy more Bitcoin, front run me. That's kind of what China's saying. We're going to be getting interest in gold now. So feel free to front run us. Like, I don't know, but I do believe that what it does is it continues a stream of gold after they get their necessary collateral for whatever it is their goal is. So I think it's becoming more of a dynamic metal.
Well, and I think that was, it's really important to note that they're paying that interest in gold, right? Like you see the headline, oh, they're paying interest. And, you know, we can put a tinfoil hat on about what that means and why they would want to be doing that. But if they're paying that interest in gold, that kind of signals something different.
Yeah, it gives them an ex I mean, the bullish thing is, and then there's the bearish version, right? The bullish is, well, they're just going to keep buying gold. They're never going to stop buying gold, and they're going to buy gold because they're directing their people to do it. It's an authoritarian government. The bearish side is, right, if you want to be the other way, it's like, oh, they're going to dump their gold on their own citizens. I mean, you could see that happening. It could go either way, but I think they need to project continued strength to the BRICS partners because the BRICS unity is still voluntary. And so because it's voluntary, you have to toe the line and take care of your weakest members, which they're doing. I think it is signaling we're not done. We're not going to be done for a long time. Yeah.
Want to bring up one more point on the ETF and deflect it over to Steve. But I think it was 20 or 2021 where the ETF purchases was 320 million ounces of silver. You wrote that in one of your reports, Steve. And the normal retail market's about 200 million ounces. So we had like 550 million ounces in that one year. And I think it might have been our friend, the chief investment officer, that spoke at the Davos gathering in 2020. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it was during the pandemic. We had the big increase in 19 and then 20. Even in, it started to come off in 21, but there was a lot of silver moved into the ETFs that year, and we also had a lot of physical silver. And so, you know, it's interesting. Vince was talking about it. What people need to realize, and if they don't, Americans are the biggest investors of silver in the world, bar none. India sometimes will surpass Americans. But not by much. Americans are the biggest buyers of silver. We're talking, and I wish I could show you this chart here. What's fascinating, in 2015, as you can see, Americans purchased 125 million ounces of silver. That was the net. That's coins, bars, rounds. Then you had the collapse in 17, 18, and 19. Look at 21 and 22. It was even higher than 15. And if you look at this next chart, this is the COMEX total silver depositories. Can you see that?
Yeah.
Yes.
What's interesting, and I'm not saying that, correlation is causation, but you'll notice in 17, 18, and 19, we start seeing an increase because demand had plummeted from U.S. silver investors. So to me, what happened was we were stockpiling silver. And then when in 21, 22, in 21, 22, and 23, we start to see a decline in silver inventories. Well, that's because you had that massive increase again of silver in the United States. And so I wanted to share that. It is amazing that we tend to, I'm going to stop sharing now. We tend to forget how much silver the Americans buy. And I looked at the U.S. Mint Silver Eagle sales, and this is interesting. Silver Eagle sales are a barometer of overall demand in the United States. And it collapsed in 24. And then if we look at that chart again on the COMEX inventories, they start going back up in 24. So we had a collapse in not only silver demand in the United States, but Silver Eagle sales from the U.S. Mint were very low. And they were very low until last month, October. They were 575,000 in September, 1.4 million in October, due to the demand from all the on social media. People got off their couches and started buying Silver Eagles and paying a lot of premium for that. So I just wanted to add those dynamics.
Well, Steve, you posted an article a little while ago, it wasn't that recent, about central banks buying silver ETFs. Do you think that that's, I've had people say before, oh, silver is going to be added by central banks. I tend to believe that central banks don't have, or they have too big of an appetite of value to be able to really stock silver. But if they start buying ETFs, what does that mean to you, Steve?
Yeah, that was Tom. To be honest, I told Bob about this. I put that up because I wanted to see how far it would go on social media, and it went on fire because I knew it would, because that's the kind of thing that drives social media and people. Even me, if I saw something like that, I would read it. But it was $30 million of Saudi Arabia. You know, they purchased of the SLV ETF. Not a lot, but you know, who knows. Central banks are buying gold. Why not buy silver? You know, I don't know if they're going to increase that. It was interesting to see Saudi Arabia do that, and I found that on the Fintel website. But we'll see. I'm looking forward to see the update for the third quarter to see if they've added. But I think we're going to see an increase. I do think central banks will start buying silver. Will they buy ETFs? I don't know, but they may be stockpiling silver just like they buy gold in the future. It makes sense to me.
Vince, anything to add there?
Yeah. I definitely envision sovereign wealth funds and sovereign entities, whether it be a central bank or like in Saudi Arabia or a stockpiler in Russia, you know, Russia itself, declaring that they're going to buy it. I think as Americans, we get hung up on words like central bank versus sovereign, at least I do, sovereign wealth fund. We're trying to figure out the right pigeonhole for everything. I just look at every nation is going to come up with an excuse to buy it. And they're going to hold it in whatever entity works for them economically. So, for example, Saudi Arabia, their central bank bought some. I mean, I can't believe that a central bank would spend money on an ETF. I can't. I mean, but simultaneously, I also can't believe that a central bank would buy silver when it takes up 80 times, you know, the space that gold does in terms of the value. And I don't believe that central banks will, and this is, I don't want to get hung up on the word central bank versus sovereign wealth fund. I don't believe central banks will ever become, ever is a wrong word to use, but will become appreciable owners of silver until they can't get gold anymore. Now, there's going to come a time when they can't get gold. That's why I think it will happen. But between now and when there's no more gold to be gotten, sovereign wealth funds are buying it, Russia's buying it, the US is buying it, we're buying it. I mean, that's my opinion, but we're buying it. We're buying it through proxies like JP Morgan, all the repatriation. And may not have bought it there, but we want it in our possession. It was already there. So I believe whether it be for industrial demand, China says we're doing it for industrial demand, or investment demand like the US does primarily, or industrial and investment demand like India, or Russia just saying, yeah, we're going to buy because it screws everyone else. You know, I mean, Russia has said, it doesn't mean they're going to do it, right? These people are not like completely honest, right? Russia has said, we're considering adding as a central bank buyer. And I think that's a load of crap. But then 2 months afterwards, Bank of America put out a report and they said, while it's ridiculously ridiculous for a central bank to buy silver, they're speaking as institutions now, not as me or you. They're just speaking, you know, practicality, responsible people. But then they said, it's ridiculous to do that. But if they bought 1% of their assets in silver, it would explode the market. And the conclusion from that analysis was, it's highly likely that you would buy 1% of silver, even because you don't need to have a lot of it, just enough. And any excuse to buy silver, because it's industrial, it's critical, it's monetary. I mean, look, silver has been the most, I mean, this is my silver spiel, right? Silver has been the worst metal on earth, putting it right in between gold and copper. Gold is money, right? We don't use it for anything else. Copper is industrial. What is silver? Well, silver is both. All of us here like silver. So silver is both. Silver is Goldilocks metal. But the Western mindset has been, you want a specialty item. I want money, so I buy gold. I want industrial, so I buy copper. And silver just kind of gets ignored sitting there or shorted. The BRICS are going, well, it's both. We want it for both. And so I think that even though I think in my heart, mathematically and financially, it makes no sense for a central bank to own silver. I would, you know, I would, even money says central banks will be buying silver inside of 2 years if they haven't already. So yeah, everyone's buying silver for some reason or another until they figure out a way to replace it. And, you know, that's not happening anytime soon. So I agree.
Through whatever means they deem necessary or works for them, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. Like, you know, I'm not, for example, like I mean, when it got harder to find gold, every nation in the BRICS had a different policy to keep their gold. In Latin America, it was, well, we want our workers paid more. In Africa, it was like, well, we want the miners who operate here to give us a bigger percentage, like in Ghana. And over in Mali, it's like, well, we're just going to take it. You know, like every nation has their own way of like Russia, we're going to export less. You know, you guys may not know this. This is very new information, but same idea. Russia has, this is about gold, not silver, but it's the same idea. Russia has greatly reduced its gold exports in 2025. It was going up and up and up to BRICS countries, you know, because they need the currency. 25, it's sloped off. So why are they not exporting gold anymore? I don't know. Why is China not exporting silver? It's, you know, it's all hard to find now. It's a very bifurcated world.
So I missed it in my notes here, but somebody posted an article on why ETFs are now, or sorry, ETFs are higher risk now than silver mining stocks. Of course, silver mining stocks are hard to find that are only dedicated just to actually producing silver. What are your guys' thoughts on owning silver mining stocks instead of ETFs from a risk standpoint? Bob,
You
you
not
want to
going to tell
start?
us who said that?
What's
You're not going
that?
to tell us who
David.
said that?
Yeah.
We need to know if we can trash this guy or not.
Well, obviously,
David.
there's risk in both. I mean, I think the ETFs were a service to the Section 7 guys. I mean, these guys wanted to have exposure to commodity, but they could only buy stocks. So somebody on Wall Street had this brilliant idea that, hey, we could commoditize gold, we'll make a GLD, we'll make an ETF, I'll hold a physical commodity, but it trades like a stock. And I remember calling the World Silver guys, in Washington, D.C., Silver Institute, talking to Mike Dorenzo and saying, hey, it's got to be having one for silver, right? Well, I really can't say, but, and sure enough, here came the SLV. So as far as risk reward, I would look at it in an individual case-by-case basis. But if everything flew apart as it might, I'd much rather have a share of Pan American Silver, which is diversified worldwide and really mining the metal, than somebody that's double counted their silver in an ETF because it's sitting in a warehouse in New York, but it's also, I've got the medallion over in London. So I'm biased toward it. But I also make a living looking at the equity side of the resource sector, primarily gold and silver, but all the resources. So I am a bit bent that way. So I'll leave it at that.
Bob, you had something to add there?
Well, just to kind of go back to the previous discussion on gold and silver, central banks, and that type of thing. Yeah, if you really want to look at this thing from a macro standpoint, the central banks getting involved with the metals is actually one easy way. You see it with the Fed with regard to what they say, moral suasion, when the Fed talks about policy. And just the talk of it can move the markets or sway opinion. Well, the central banks, you know, if they want to devalue their currencies, but they don't want to devalue the currency against another currency, but they want to devalue it against something, like for example, gold. Like, you know, everyone looks at, you know, the Ch Chinese market and so forth, and how, you know, gold has, you know, just gone vertical in that market. And it's, if you look at it relative to the yuan, it's been devaluing the yuan via the gold. And it's a way for them to obviously try to inflate their way out of, you know, their debt and their real estate mess and so forth. Well, if you really want to try to, as a central bank, try to create opinion, well, what's the best way to do it is go after a small asset class like silver and just talk about the idea of buying it. And that'll get the That'll get the world kind of looking at it, and all of a sudden you get, like Vince was talking about, you get all this capital flow going into a small asset class. It's going to start pumping the asset class, and maybe it's a central bank's idea of saying, listen, we're just trying to devalue the currency that we have against something, and they can use that type of policy to do it. And that's, that's just one thing to look at. But on the silver thing with regard to ETFs versus buying stocks, I think the problem that we face, and it's one of the reasons why I manage a hedge fund, it's all physical metal. My concern is we're in this sort of melt up phase in the markets, where everything is basically going up. The concern I have is counterparty and systemic risk. At some point, the music's gonna stop. And the question is, yes, prices can go all over the place. They can go down, they can go up. But at least, having the metal, so to speak, you don't have that counterparty risk. Now, I know it doesn't maybe answer the question, do I take the ETF or do I take the mining stock? The problem with the mining stocks, though, is if you get into a debt deflationary type of situation, there's capitalization costs and so forth. Countries can come in and nationalize mines. I mean, you saw just with COVID how the Canadians, in their brilliant, infinite wisdom, shut down the entire country, including the mining sector. And that only lasted, what, about a week or two until they realized, uh-oh, we can't really do this. So you don't know what governments are going to do in regard to like a any type of reaction to, some type of event or catastrophe.
Well, leave it to us to limp across the finish line last, as a friend of mine says. Vince or Steve, anything to add there to the ETF versus miners debate?
I wanted to basically reiterate what Dave had said, in the sense that, I mean, the question is, what's the bigger risk, ETFs or silver miners? Is that all right? So, not knowing what that person's perspective is, whoever they are, and they should remain anonymous for saying that, it depends on what you're looking at, right? It's
Exactly.
the management. I mean, this is what we're all seeing here, right? Depends on the management, depends on the diversification of their sources of silver, assuming it is a pure silver player. And the ETF, it's counterparty risk. It's one nation's counterparty risk. It's also the nation saying, I think Bob said it earlier, well, what if we're not going to take in any more silver and it's just going to become a tracking stock? Well, what happens to it then? So I think it's a matter of the type of risk that you're comfortable with, but be it counterparty risk, be it systemic risk, or just be it geopolitical, regulatory risk. So it's there you go.
One quick question, maybe Dave or everybody can. When we saw that with the Indian silver ETFs, they were having some premiums, pretty big premium on the, and we've seen this a bit in the past, even on the PSLV and the SLV, you get a premium or you get a discount. But if you really can't get metal in the future, and what the silver price on the futures goes from 50 to 75 and 100, but you can't add the metal and add the shares. What happens to the premium of these ETFs? I'm still not clear on that.
Initially, it'll explode to the upside, because the price will basically, you have so much capital flow coming in, people are going to buy it, not understanding, oh, that silver's fixed at that point, but we're still going to take, we still want to buy the silver and have representation. That's kind of like what happened with PSLV when it first came out. Is it was new, it was exciting, everyone started piling into it. They didn't have, the amount of fixed silver to or variable fix or variable silver to match the capital inflows. The thing went to a big premium. That's the downside of, people jumping in without really looking. And I think you see it with Bitcoin. What was it? There's a couple of Bitcoin ETFs that went to a big premium, and then they went to a huge discount. And then, so yeah, there's that risk of spreads and so forth that I you probably just pointed out that people probably aren't even watching.
Well, guys, in wrapping up here, I want to ask each of you individually, what are the next things that are on your radar for silver? Are they, the resolution of this tariff announcement? Is it, some big piece of demand that you've been kind of seeing sprinklings of? David, can we start with you?
Well, definitely paying attention to the critical minerals that we started this this podcast with. Are we going to get an announcement that the United States government's going to buy X amount of silver over X amount of time? If they're going to buy 5 million ounces a year over the next 50 years, I don't think that's going to have much of an impact. But if they want to replenish what they started it with, which in 1985 was 139 million ounces, and they want to get to 100 million ounces in a year's time, I think that will move the market. I think that's number one. Number two, technically, I want to see what it does around the $50 level. I'm okay with silver trading above and below 50 for a couple months. I don't want to do it for a couple years. I'm not going to live a whole lot longer, but I really do think that some consolidation here is healthy. And then I want to see who the new buyers are. If Saudi Arabia comes in, I think maybe I don't speak for Vince, but if these other nation states come in for whatever reason, I don't care. Silver never asks, am I being bought for industrial reasons or monetary reasons? It just gets bought.
That
But
just
the
gets
monetary
right.
demand is what's going to drive it. And so if some of these sovereign wealths, central banks, nation states follow suit and say, you know what, silver's a lot cheaper than gold and it's a hell of a lot more useful. I think I want to stockpile X amount just to build out my solar panels in Peru, or Mexico says we've had enough of this, narco terrorism slash US getting involved, whatever, and we're going to put a tariff on Mexican silver, which is like the second or first largest producer, 10%. Well, 10% on a $50 silver, that's a $5 bill. So that's the second thing I'm looking at. And lastly, I'm looking at just, publicly saying, hey, thanks for all these guys that are out there, like Steve and Bob and Vince and, so many others, because, I was a lone wolf there for a while. It was me and Butler, and all he did really look at was the paper side, which is okay. But I was trying to take a holistic picture from, the physical guy on the street that wants to buy silver. Why? I went out with a microphone and asked people why. And it's really nice to have this kind of brain trust to go, because I never said I knew it all, but to go back and just have friends that will help me out when I get in a bind. I mean, Bob's called me and said, hey, do you know about this? And I've helped him and Steve and on and on. So I won't belabor it. And it's also nice to get a little vindication too, because as far as I'm concerned, silver, is reflects, reflects light better than any metal, conducts heat better than any metal. So as far as I'm concerned, those that don't see the light are going to feel the heat, and that's coming on.
That's good.
Well put, Dave. Vince, go ahead.
Dave, I mean, I came just to address what Dave said there. So he said some nice things. I came completely from the financial side. I'm a derivatives options guy, and I was plunked in the silver ring as my first ring. And because silver was such a dead commodity for trading, on the floor, we had a lot of free time. So I became a student of the fundamentals, not the physical, just what it was used for. And so I became like a hybrid in the financial community. And it was only until I started listening to people like you that I understood the actual physicality of it, not just the fact that it's a property that's reflected or anyway. Like I've been since the 90s, I've been waiting for NASA to launch their solid state silver batteries for everyone to use, in 1993, I'm sitting on the floor holding a piece of paper going, wow, they used a silver battery on the moon? When is that going to happen? Go out and buy silver. And of course, I lost my ass thinking like that for years. And then I just went back to doing what I do best, and that's trading spreads and options and derivatives. But along that time frame, I learned from people like you and well, a bunch of other people. I'm not gonna listen to these, but so now I understand the physical side of it. So I'm not speak I'm speaking for everyone, I think, in general. So we appreciate you helping us, at least helping me down that path. Tom, to answer your question, your question was like, what are some things that you're looking at next? Because I had, if I can remember them, specific answers. And the first answer is I've noticed that the precious metals are reacting more to coming events more than in the past. Now, gold's obvious, whether it be a data point or a shutdown, right? But silver is now too. Silver, the LBMA squeeze, I mean, for years we'd say LBMA is running out of silver. They're hiding the silver. They're doing this, they're doing that. And no one cared. People yawned. But now it's happening. And I say that because the next event I'm looking at is whenever the leases that the LBMA has coming off, what will happen? I see China depleting their own silver available. You know, they're just like basically throwing a sheet over it and putting it in another room and saying it's not available anymore. That's what they're doing. I mean, that's how you do it. And LBMA has got to be going around looking for silver. So the big event for me would be whatever it is, 30, 60, 90 days, when leases have to be renewed to the extent that they have to be renewed. The other thing is I'm looking for more. I'm always looking for confirmation for the critical mineral type stuff. You know, like I talk to Josh Fair as frequently as I can over at Scottsdale, because I talk to him about copper. What I get from him about copper, I look at silver and I say, can it happen in silver? So I'm looking for events to happen, and I do think that there's one other thing that I think it's a major event. And it's a prediction of sorts, but I believe that to the extent that the BRICS are successful in launching a collateral product for financing, look, the BRICS are not just going to put the gold in a garage. They want the gold for a financing tool. They want to use it as collateral for repo at some point. This is my opinion and a couple other people, but my opinion. And I believe that as this happens, you're going to be like, well, what else can we use? And I believe, like, let's say you're a South American nation that doesn't have a lot of gold, but you have a lot of silver. You're like, well, can I use silver for collateral? And I believe the price of gold stabilizing at a higher price will drive silver and other commodities up to their occurrence in nature, because silver, even though I think it's not wise to do, can be used as collateral for these monetary things they want to do. I think. Silver's being bought, whether by central bank, sovereign wealth fund, or whoever, because of its dual purpose, and it can be used as collateral. And I think the BRICS are going to do more of that. So that's I'm looking for an announcement in that effect, and I'm looking for the LBMA announcement in 30, 60, or 90 days. So that those are on my radar.
Excellent. Steve, what about you?
Yeah, Dave, I remember when we used to know each other back when we didn't have the aches and pains. And so you know you're getting old in the silver industry when you start getting up there. But I think, Tom, the important thing is I like to look at the fundamentals because I started investing in silver in 2002. And after years, I could never figure out how come they're trading this way. And I could really find, no one told me, well, why are the metals trading this way? Why does gold trade at 750 back in 2007, 8? Why is it trade at 750? Why does silver trade at $15? And so then I looked at the cost of production. And I'm not saying it's the right thing, but the market told me when you look at gold and silver, they trade off the cost of production. They have. Gold got to a low of 1050 back in 2016, and that was very close to its cost of production. Right now, gold's cost of production to top miners is like 2200, 2300. They're laughing all the way to the bank. They're making almost $2,000 profit per ounce. The silver miners, I haven't done the most current update yet. They haven't come out with their quarter three. All of them haven't, but it's 26. Oops, sorry. It's $26. So the problem is they're at $52 an ounce silver, they're making $26 an ounce profit. My concern only short term is a deflationary wave. If we're going to hit a deflationary wave, then we're going to get a correction in the metals. But that's only short term. I think due to the fundamentals, we're moving forward. We're going to see much higher prices. And I think Vince made a good point. They're kind of disconnecting from the cost of production because I always forecasted they're going to disconnect from the cost of production. I don't know when that's going to be. It seems like it's starting now, but I'm worried about a deflationary wave in a year or two. But after that, I think we will see much higher metals prices due to, I think Vince is right. And I've talked to Bob about this, and even David understands. collateral should cost energy to produce it. And I have a chart showing the U.S. Treasuries. The cost of a U.S. Treasury is about 3-4%. That's the interest expense. Gold is 80% cost. Silver is 90% cost on average over 25 years. So if you're going to store collateral, it has to be based on energy. And I think this is going to become a major component in the years ahead. So that, I just wanted to share that information.
Bob, how about you?
Yeah, I think from an investor standpoint, you got to keep it simple. Try not to get too caught up in the weeds of, you know, all the stories out there. Social media will take your mind and will send it down empty rabbit holes to the, you know, to the nauseam, I guess you could say. But I think at the end of the day, this is all about debt servicing, deficit spending, you know, monetary issues. And then, at, you know, for silver's perspective, you know, it's obviously technology. It's, you know, the growth of, you know, alternative power. And then, you know, which a lot of people, you know, like Vince talked earlier, you know, this battery that was at Samsung that had created that, you know, could revolutionize, you know, the electric car industry, that type of thing. I mean, these are things to watch out for. We don't know why there's so much buying of silver right now on an industrial level. You know, obviously some of it's solar panel and you know, in the automobile, there's more silver in circuitry and so forth, smart technology. But, you know, at the end of the day, some of this stuff is not going to come out, you know, on the front page, you know, for until after, you know, the product's put forth and you know, that technology is being used in day-to-day lives. So from that standpoint, you know, just try to, you know, keep an open mind on terms of not getting caught up. Certainly don't play leverage. I mean, stay away from that. You know, the advantage of owning, whether it's physical or some of these mining stocks, so forth, not playing on leverage is if you do have that drawdown, like Steve was talking about, you don't get wiped out of your position. You can kind of live to fight another day. And I think that's one of the things I try to promote, at least on social media, is, you know, keeping it simple, and then friends don't let friends trade on margin.
Well said, Bob. Gentlemen, I want to thank you very much for being so generous with your time. Dave, thank you for missing or rescheduling your workout for us to be here to be able to coordinate everybody's schedules. Of course, Dave's available at themorganreport.com, on X at SilverGuru22. Vince, VBL Goldfix Substack, VBLGoldfix.com, and Soren the K on X. Bob, Profits Plus ID on X and GoldSilverVault.com. And of course, Steve of SRSRoccoReport.com and at SRSRoccoReport on X. Gentlemen, thank you so very much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.